This podcast may contain explicit language or disturbingly descriptive imagery. Listen at your own discretion.
You must be either mad or insane to seek out this godforsaken place. But since you're here, I guess I can show you the Nest of Horrors. Don't fall.
The Nest of Horrors presents part 2 of The Body Farm, written by Brian Martinez and narrated by Erosion Rob, Liam Huell, Sky Vox, J.D. Jones, and John Donahue.
They asked me to go back. It was 3 days ago I was picked up, tired and hungry on that dock. The captain had found me with a dying flashlight in one hand and a turned-off radio in the other. This time, I was the one who didn't say much. I just got out of the boat, drove home in a daze, and fell asleep in my bed. I spent a lot of the time since thinking about what I'd experienced on Twain Island, the rest of it applying to jobs who didn't call back. I went back and read what I wrote. It sounds almost ridiculous now, like the ravings of a wild man, especially happening so soon after I woke up. The more I thought about it, the less real it seemed. As I was applying for other guard jobs, the guy who runs the temp agency called me to tell me the forensic anthropology facility had contacted them to ask about hiring me again. With no hesitation, I told him I had no interest in going back to that island. While I was at it, I thanked him for not warning me about the nature of their research. He swore to me he didn't know. I didn't believe him, and told me before I made up my mind they were willing to raise their rate by almost 30%.
I think they're tired of giving the free tour, if you know what I mean.
He said, "It's hard to argue with that kind of money when you're unemployed." There was still the whole matter of the disappearing body, and the creepy laughter, and the traces of death in the guard's office, which were 3 very good reasons to never go back. I couldn't exactly ask him about all that without sounding insane, so I asked him the next best thing. "Did they have any complaints about the last time?" I asked. The way I figured, if a body got up and walked away on my watch, they might think I had something to do with it.
"If they had any complaints?"
he said.
"I doubt we'd be talking right now."
He was right, of course. The whole thing was feeling more and more like something I dreamed up. About an hour earlier, I had checked my bank account, which was getting grim. And now, here I was saying no to a cushy paycheck. I thought of Eric's advice, how it was the easiest job in the world so long as you could manage the mental bit. Then, I thought of my dad, who worked in high-rise construction for 30 years. And once drove himself back to a job site after having his thumb sewn back on so he could finish out the day. "God help me," I went. A thought occurred to me as the boat captain drove me over to the island. What if the body actually had gone missing, and they were luring me back to question me about it, or even catch me in the act of doing it again? What if they'd have gone to the cops, but didn't have enough evidence to accuse me? My stomach sank. And I looked over at the old guy at the wheel. He looked back at me with a funny look in his eye. Maybe it was something. Maybe it was nothing. It was too late to turn around now. When I got to the island, it was still bright out, which helped me get off the dock and onto land, and I was interested to note that no one had come to greet me when I arrived. I took it as a good sign, and went to track down Eric. It didn't take long. He was at the computer in the guard's office.
"Oh, I didn't think I'd see you around here again,"
he said with a laugh. Apparently the boat captain told everyone how ready I was to leave when he pulled up the other day. It was a little embarrassing, but to be fair, no one had prepared me for the kind of shit I'd show up for. Eric found it hilarious, but I could tell he understood where I was coming from. While we were on the subject, I asked him if he had ever heard anything weird on the island, especially on the night shift. He asked me what kind of weird. I don't know. Stuff moving? Voices? He got a soda from the fridge.
Uh-oh. Don't tell me you're the superstitious type. That doesn't really fly here.
As he chugged the soda down, I assured him that I was a rational person, but he seemed skeptical. According to him, despite Twain Island being an island, there were still plenty of animals that lived here. Some swam over, others came over on boats or floating garbage.
We've asked Dr. Christensen about animal control, but he says it would ruin the balance of nature, which is important for data, or whatever. I think he just doesn't want to pay for it out of his own grant money.
It wasn't the first time I got the vibe that no one liked the doctor. After I finished catching up with Eric, he threw away his empty can and announced he was going to complete his final rounds before it was time to go home. I think he expected me to hang out in the office, like he would if he could, so it surprised him when I headed out in the opposite direction. I wanted to reacquaint myself with the island and the interns. Based on the look he gave me, he definitely thought I was a crazy person. The real reason for my walk was even crazier than he suspected. No one was working in the main clearing, so I used the privacy to check the cage where the body had disappeared, or where I'd convinced myself that it had. At this point, I didn't know what to think. It had been an uneventful return so far, and I doubted I would get such a mild reception if they suspected me of something as gross as grave robbing. So, as you can imagine, I was especially confused when I found the woman inside the cage. There, like she never left. She was less an inflated bag of maggots by now, more skin and bones than the last time I'd seen her. Her rotting body was oddly comforting. When I turned away from her, Bernard the intern was standing on the other side of the clearing with a clipboard in one hand and a ruler in the other, checking on one of the other bodies. I don't know how long he'd been there, but when I turned to leave, he threw me a look too nasty to ignore. Instead of heading back to the office as planned, I went his way and struck up a conversation. Something pointless about the weather, which he stayed quiet through. When I was done with my bit, he, not so subtly, changed the subject. He asked me what my interest was in the female specimen, and the way he asked it, I understood what he was implying, which, by the way, is disgusting. I didn't know how to answer him without sounding insane, so I told him I'd heard some sounds out this way the last time, but when I came to inspect the site, there was nobody there. But what he said next made my legs go cold.
Did you move her?
It took me a second. I said no. No, I definitely didn't, and would have no reason to. And I asked him why he would ask something like that. He didn't want to say it at first, but after I asked a few more times, he told me the photos hadn't matched up from one day to the next, specifically the position of the body. I asked him if it was possibly animals, the ones Eric told me lived on the island, the garbage riders. Like I was a child who'd asked a dumb question in class, he tapped the cage next to him with his foot and looked at me to say,
"That's what these are for."
"What about gases?" I asked. "All those things that happen when we decompose. Couldn't that move a body?" With no lack of attitude, he assured me he knew which movements were natural and which ones weren't.
"She was definitely moved. If it was you, you're better off coming clean."
I could see he wasn't going to bend on this, so I told him it wasn't me, and if he didn't believe me, it wasn't my problem, and I went back to the guard's office. But I'd be lying if I said our conversation didn't weigh on me for a long time after that. By the time Eric got back from his final rounds, I was in a dark place. My thoughts were spiraling down, and I was angry at myself for coming back to the island. I was giving strong thought to quitting and hitching a ride back on the late boat, and Eric could probably tell, since he was acting especially light and jokey, trying to improve the mood in the guard's office. I suspected it was less for me and more for himself, which he proved when he casually dropped that he had some big plans for the night, which would have been ruined if I hadn't shown up. At that point, Terry popped her head in for a few minutes to say hi and ask Eric a question about the alarm system in the main research building. Before she left, she told me it was good to see me again. After she was gone, Eric chuckled and said how obvious it was that Terry was into me, I told him that was bullshit.
Why do you think they asked you back?
He asked. You were tired of giving the free tour, I quoted.
There's other guys that could have asked. And she brought your name up like 5 times in the past 3 days. Said you have kind eyes. Who else were they gonna bring back?
I didn't put much faith in what Eric said. But it beat thinking about other things. It didn't hurt that Terry was pretty cute. In a weird, works with dead bodies way. The thought of asking her out distracted me for a while. Soon enough, I was alone. The boat came and left. And like an idiot, I didn't get on it. I spent the first hour like the first night, on the internet. Visiting the usual time wasters, but after a while, I started to think about what Bernard had said. This guy, this bog-looking prick, doesn't even know me, wasn't even there that night. Yet, he thinks he can throw around disgusting accusations. Pretty soon, I wasn't paying attention to the screen. I was thinking about cornering Bernard in one of the more private areas of the woods, and giving him something real to accuse me of. I'm not an outwardly violent guy. That doesn't mean that I'm incapable of it. Something by the door caught my attention. Movement. I turned in time to catch a spot of darkness moving past the window. And for the second time that day, my legs went cold. The shadow was in the vague shape of a person. I'd like to say that I jumped out of my chair, flung the door open, and jumped on the intruder like a damn security guard. But the truth is, I stayed as still as I could. I listened to the grass rustle, and I didn't move a muscle until the sound was gone. A minute later, I stood at the open door, shining my flashlight into the dark. And even though I didn't want to, even though I hated to admit it, I found myself surrounded by the very familiar, very strong smell of a rotting corpse. My first instinct, and it would be yours too, was to step back inside and lock the door, radio the police, and shut myself in a broom closet until help arrived. But I also know that dead bodies don't get up and walk around, that those things don't happen except in movies. I pictured my dad, and what he would do in this situation if he was still alive. He would find whoever was screwing with him and jam his reattached thumb into their eye. My undetached one would have to do. Due to an overcast night, the woods were already black. The way the flashlight's beam pierced the night reminded me of footage of deep-sea divers. I moved quietly between the trees and toward the main clearing, and strained to hear even the slightest sound of footsteps or movement in the woods ahead of or around me. But other than the wind and the ocean, I couldn't hear a thing. What made me happiest, though, was finding the woman's body in its cage where it belonged. Even now, that sounds like an unbelievable thing to find relief in. And after a quick check, I discovered all of her roommates were in their respective cages too, at least in this site. Taking courage from that, I decided to finally do some proper rounds. There was a mystery on that island, something the employees weren't telling me, and it was time I figured it out. I moved into the woods at a sharp angle, aiming to reach the shore at a particular spot I'd seen with Eric the other day, a point at the island's highest where he said you could see a small cave opening at low tide. The point itself didn't matter so long as I had a target, though something about the overcast night got me confused. Not being able to use the moon or stars as a reference, and after a couple of minutes, I found myself turned around. As it turns out, the island is larger than I'd thought at first, and it's very possible to get lost on it. I tried to correct my path using the sound of the ocean, just keep heading toward the waves. But after a minute, I came into a clearing and was surprised to find it was the one I had left a few minutes earlier. If I were a smarter man, I would have said screw it and returned to the office. But my decision to find answers had made me too stubborn to take the easy way out. Instead, I turned around and headed once again for the same spot on the shore. This time I made an even sharper angle. There was no way I was going to end up back in that clearing. The good news is, I didn't. The bad news is, I became completely disoriented by the night, and the tree after tree after identical tree. And it wasn't long before I couldn't even tell which way the ocean was. The sound of waves coming through from all directions. Twice, I came across body cages, but I didn't stop too long enough to get a look at them. It was bad enough putting my back to them in the dark. Thinking about their dead eyes on me put some speed in my step. If you've ever been lost, you know the feeling of frustration and hopelessness it brings. You kick yourself for being so stupid. You blame yourself for every mistake you've ever made. Whether or not you believe in God, you start making pacts and promises. If you just get me out of this, I promise to be a better person. Even though you fully intend to forget everything you said the moment you're found again. Bottle up that feeling and let it loose on an island of cadavers, and you'll start to understand what went through my head in those woods. When I got really desperate, I started to notice the smell of rotting meat. With the breeze blowing so erratically through the trees, I couldn't get a bearing on which direction this thing came from. Whether it was following me or I was following it wasn't clear. Only thing was, it was getting stronger. I didn't know if I should walk slower to keep from stepping in something or run away from someone pursuing me. As much as I wanted to check the trees, my flashlight stayed trained on the ground. Thank God it did. Out of nowhere, I came across a body. A pair of purple feet sticking up from a patch of green ivy. It wasn't even marked with a flag, which I thought was extremely dangerous. And if it had been, the flag had fallen and disappeared under the thick vines. The body was muscular. Definitely a man. And as I got closer, I saw it was missing its head and one of its arms. Flies buzzed on its freshly ruptured skin. Their whining voices got under my own skin, into my eardrums, and nausea bubbled in my stomach. The taste of acid at the back of my throat. I threw up behind a tree. Doubled over, wiping my mouth clean, a stick snapped somewhere in the woods under weight, as if someone had stepped on it. I straightened up and aimed my flashlight toward the sound of approaching footsteps, and I called out, "Who's there?" The beam of light found feet. Not the corpse's feet, but walking feet. Feet wearing shoes. Feet attached to legs and pants and a grey coat.
"You're contaminating my sight,"
the bearded man said. I didn't have to ask him for identification. It was Dr. Christiansen.
"The other guards don't come this far inland."
"To be honest, I'm a little lost," I admitted to him.
"This isn't the place to do that,"
he said as he walked over. I agreed completely. I told him I thought everyone had gone home by now.
"I'm one of those fortunate few who does what he loves,"
he said.
"I get lost in the work."
I wasn't sure how the statement made me feel about the doctor. On the one hand, I admired his work ethic. But on the other, a man who can get lost in this kind of work doesn't exactly make you feel comfortable being around him at night. "You missed the boat," I told him. But he shrugged it off.
If I call for another, another comes,"
he explained. "Did you happen to walk past the guard's office a little while ago?" His face shifted.
"Are you keeping track of me?"
I shook my head no.
"You worry about people trying to get on to the island. I'll worry about what they do while they're here."
I nodded. There wasn't any arguing with a prick like that. He pointed me in the right direction back to the buildings. I thanked him and went to leave, but at the last second I turned back. There was something I needed to know. "This really doesn't bother you?" I asked. But his expression told me everything. He was tired of this question. And not just tired of it, above it.
"I find it fascinating. Not that I need to. The data I gather here will give police the evidence they need to catch countless criminals."
"I guess I can't get over the fact that they used to be people. That guy, right there," I pointed. "Do you even know his name?" The doctor no longer looked like he wanted to humor me.
By any remote chance, do you know why I asked you back?
He asked. I told him probably because everyone else said no.
Because I don't like to answer questions. That's why I chose an island for my research in the first place.
They say no man is an island, I offered, because I couldn't think of what else to say.
They are worried about being popular.
That certainly wasn't a problem he shared. I thanked him for helping me find my way, but by that time he wasn't paying attention to me anymore. He was studying the headless man and taking down some notes. So I left without another word and headed in the direction he'd said. It was surprisingly easy to find my way back after that. Within 20 minutes, I was standing in front of the open door of the guard's office. As I entered the building, I tried to remember for the life of me if I'd left the door open. I tell you, I could have sworn I closed it. I took a quick piss in the cramped bathroom, washed my hands, and grabbed a soda from the fridge, downing it in 3 long swigs. I threw the can in the garbage pail where it joined Eric's and a few others. It seemed they were more concerned with recycling people than they were aluminium. There was a big corkboard hung up in the eating area with a bunch of random things tacked to it. Health notices, old flyers, a few articles cut out of medical magazines. But it was the photo that caught my attention. It was one of those unflattering pictures people love to take of each other at work. Messy hair and a few extra pounds only matter if it's a picture of you, right? It seemed like a recent photo, probably taken with one of the digital cameras they used to photograph the bodies and print it out on the office printer. Yet, I didn't recognize the guy in it. He was in fairly good shape, arms bulged against the short sleeves of his guard's uniform. On his right forearm, he had a tattoo of a green snake wrapped around a red apple. I thought back to the body in the middle of the woods, where Dr. Christensen and I had talked. No cage, no flag, pretty muscular, missing the head as well as one of the arms. Missing an arm. The right arm. Just to be safe, I locked the door.
Hope you enjoyed this episode and will join us for more.